I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Zach Kamenetz, founder of the Shefa Organization, discussing psychedelics and Judaism. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guest on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom, and a slightly premature Chag Sameach V'Kasher and a Zis and Pesach. This is the last week of preparations before the holiday of Passover, which begins this Friday night, April 15th. And there's nothing that says Pesach more than cleaning, cooking, and preparing. While some people might think that a non-Jewish holiday like, Christmas or something takes more preparation than any other festival, I mean, they actually cut down trees, drag them into their living rooms, and set them up there to die for a few weeks. Anyway, in truth, most of the holiday preparations for that December 25th American festival are not actually integral to it. Trees and electric lights and statues of reindeer and Santa Claus and expensive presents, well, they are not religiously mandated. They didn't even begin to be part of that celebration until the 19th and 20th centuries. But Passover, ha ha ha. Pesach preparations are actually commanded in a series of tremendously ancient texts, beginning with the description of the very first Passover some 3,250 years ago, on the night before we got out of slavery in Egypt. In the Torah in Exodus, and later in other regulations specified in Numbers and even Deuteronomy, we're told that on the Leil Shimurim, the watch night of the 14th of Nisan, we are supposed to spend the evening, maybe the whole night, telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt and our flight to freedom. We are to eat the roast Paschal lamb, the leaping sheep of freedom, with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Teach our children the lesson of slavery and of God's redemption to freedom. And we are commanded, not advised, but ordered, to eat only unleavened foods for the week that follows, to remove all chametz, all the leavened food and food products and implements from our homes. And if we live in Israel, we are supposed to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, celebrating the Passover there. The mitzvot, the commandments, are quite explicit and very ancient. But of course, that doesn't end the discussion or the requirements. The rabbis of the Mishnah, completed nearly 1,800 years ago, and their successors who created the Gemara, finished about 1,550 years ago, the whole that's combined to make up the Talmud, well, they added an entire array of ways to observe the Passover that extended its sway to every area of our homes and our lives. The rabbis begin by asking what it means to remove leavening, chametz, from the home. And they create a whole system that requires the most thorough spring cleaning imaginable, moving furniture and bookcases, unearthing closets, taking out every possible form of weed or other grain-based products from our homes, removing or cleaning every single plate, platter, utensil, or appliance that has come into any contact with leavening. That process of bedikat chametz, searching for chametz, for leaven, mechirat chametz, selling the chametz, the leaven, and finally biur chametz, burning the chametz, the leaven stuff, culminates this Thursday and Friday. It is a complicated observance indeed. You see, once you've removed all the chametz from your house, technically you don't actually have to throw it out or give it all away. You can store it safely in a garage or a sealed cabinet and then formally sell it to a non-Jew for a nominal sum for that week of Pesach. This process is actually used in Israel by huge corporations like Osem that produced baked goods for the whole nation. Anyway, after technically selling off chametz, the mechirat chametz, I've always wondered what would happen if the non-Jew who owns all the chametz in Israel decided after Pesach not to sell it back. Anyway, after doing that and searching for any leftover leaven, the bedikat chametz, whatever remains is burned. This process of biur chametz is pretty fun. You gather the last boxes of cereals, the leftover rolls and Pop-Tarts and partial bagels, and using a can or a foil enclosure or a chiminea or whatever combustion chamber you favor, you burn all of it up. I remember when I lived in Jerusalem, walking home the day before that first Seder, seeing small fires on every corner, and some not-so-small fires, people burning chametz in final preparation for Passover. It was a great cathartic moment, casting off your last bits of impurity before observing the great rituals of the Festival of Freedom. Of course, if the preparations for Passover simply included getting rid of chametz, this holiday would be pretty easy. But it turns out there are many, many other things you need to do to get ready for the Passover Seder, the most rigorously structured meal ever. That means having matzah, the unleavened bread, wine or grape juice sufficient for 4 cups for everybody to drink, bitter herbs in 2 forms, hard-boiled eggs, parsley, spring veggies, charoset, the chopped fruit and nut mixture that's made to look like the mortar that the slaves put between the bricks but tastes delicious. And all of that is before you eat your main meal, which in Ashkenazic tradition includes gefilte fish, then hot chicken soup with matzo balls, brisket or other heavy main dishes. Interestingly, few European or American Jews actually eat lamb on Passover. Various kosher for Passover kugels, matzah-based casseroles, and if you have any room, non-rising desserts. The work involved in the Pesach Seder turns free Jewish people into slaves once again, at least in this preparation period, and the post-Seder cleanup can be no less onerous than the preparations. And then, if you are Orthodox or conservative or progressive or just hosting a congregational Seder like we are at Congregation Beit Simcha this year on the second night, you do it all over again on Saturday night. All of that labor can actually make you appreciate freedom much more fully, especially when it's done. And maybe that's the point. When you have completed the arduous preparations, it's time to celebrate true freedom with food, family, friends, and song. In that Passover spirit, and to play us in this morning, here's a unique English language version of the classic song Chag Gadyah from the songs that we sing at the end of the Seder for Passover coming up this Friday night, Saturday night. This is from comic actor and rock musician Jack Black, who is, of course, Jewish, singing Chag Gadyah, an only kid.
Well, there came a goat, there came a kid that father bought for 2 zuzim. Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came a cat that ate the kid that father bought for 2 zuzim. Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. There came a dog that bit the cat that ate the kid that father bought for 2 zuzim. Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came a stick that beat the dog, that bit the cat that ate the kid that father bought for 3 wheels. Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came the fire that burnt the stick that bit the dog, that bit the cat that ate the kid that father bought for 2 zuzim. Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came the water that quenched the fire, that burnt the stick, that beat the dog, that bit the cat, that ate the kid, that father bought for 3 wheels, and Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came the ox that drank the water, that quenched the fire, that burnt the stick, that beat the dog, that bit the cat, that ate the kid, that father bought for 2 zuzim. Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came the butcher that slaughtered the ox, that drank the water, that quenched the fire, that burnt the stick, that beat the dog, that bit the cat, that ate the cat, the father, but for 3 wheels, and Chag Gadyah, Chag Gadyah. Then came the angel of death.
Death.
That slayed the butcher, They slaughtered the ox that drank the water, that quenched the fire, that burnt the stick, that beat the dog, that bit the cat, that ate the kid, that father, but for two zoos in. Then came the Lord our God, King of the universe, that smote the angel of death, that slayed the butcher, that slaughtered the ox, that drank the water, that quenched the fire, that burnt the stick, that beat the dog, that bit the cat, that ate the kid, that father, but for three, we use him.
That was actor and musician Jack Black singing Chad Gad Yah from the Passover Seder, coming this Friday night, April 15th. You can still join us at Congregation Beit Simcha for our second night community Seder, Saturday night, April 16th. Our theme is freedom with an outstretched hand, focusing on helping refugees, particularly Ukrainian Jews, on this great festival of freedom, but also a great celebration. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Now, there's a story that goes with that last piece of music. Jack Black is Jewish, of course, a famous actor and musician. He starred in movies like School of Rock, High Fidelity, the Jumanji series, among many other comedies that required somebody stocky, Jewish, brilliant, and slightly crazier seeming than Seth Rogen. Jack Black is also half of the rock duo Tenacious D. Anyway, Jack Black recording a Chad Gad Yah from the Seder is fun. You know, a celebrity Jewish guy doing a Seder song with real innovative rock and roll flair, if a slightly garbled Aramaic pronunciation at times. Well, the rest of the story is this. I have a friend, Rabbi Joe Black, a past guest of Two Jewish, who is a Jewish music recording star. Remember, that's Jewish music recording star, which means you don't give up the day job because you can't make a living doing that. Anyway, Rabbi Joe Black is also the rabbi of a huge congregation in Denver, Colorado, and he and his wife visited us in Tucson not too long ago. When I played the Jack Black song for my wife Sophie, his Chad Gad Yah, she enjoyed it and commented that she was surprised a rabbi had garbled the pronunciation of the Aramaic. Then she asked how that song would have been if Jack Black had sung it. She actually thought that Rabbi Joe Black did the recording, not Jack Black. I immediately texted that to Rabbi Joe Black, who laughed by text. You might say it's all there in black and white. Sorry. In any case, when we come back on Two Jewish, our guest, who is not Jack Black, Rabbi Zach Kamenetz, explains how he began his journey into Judaism and psychedelics, and just what a psychedelic Jewish organization is. Find out right here in a moment on Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Zach Kamenetz is a fascinating guy. He is the really creator of Shefa, which means divine flow of energy in Jewish mystical tradition. And he is perhaps the most advanced rabbi working with psychedelics in the world. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning to you and thank you. That's such a kind thing to say, but I have to say that there are more advanced people than I that know how to keep their mouth shut.
Well, as a rabbi, keeping your mouth shut is probably not the first thing you learn. So
hard.
Yeah, really hard. As a Jew.
Woe if I don't reveal.
Yeah, kind of like that. Tell us how you got involved with psychedelics initially.
Well, up to 2017, I was what they call in the business psychedelically naive. And I one day received an email from a good friend of mine who had been rejected from a clinical study where they were going to give psilocybin to religious leaders from all different religious traditions. And I thought, why not? I had just read an article by Michael Pollan in the New Yorker. I was intrigued. I had done my fair share of cannabis in high school, but I was thoroughly scared out of my mind by DARE in elementary school, and so I just thought, I don't want to take anything that's going to scramble my DNA or break my brain. So I was a participant in the study, had two major psychedelic experiences under clinical watch, a lot of preparation and integration with my guides, a lot of surveys after the experiences, and came to really understand and appreciate the wave of energy that was happening now really is starting to break around psychedelics in the mainstream, and wanted to make sure that there was a Jewish organization that was able to have a Jewish answer, that had competent, religious, and culturally respectful ways of channeling the energy of the psychedelic renaissance into individual and communal life.
So just for clarification, the experience you had, this is under clinical supervision, was that microdosing or was that a larger dose of the psychedelic?
Oh, this was macro dosing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was 6-hour experiences on a couch with two people in the room, guided by music and with an eye shade, and with the invitation to go inward as deeply and as far as possible.
We will explore that experience more and then how that's motivated you into some very interesting directions when we come back in a moment with Zach Kamenetz here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, Jewish life cycle celebrations, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. You can email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page, Shabbat Evening Celebration Services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is BeitSimcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson, and our services are there every week. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. You can access those by going to our website or emailing me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is also available in blended format, some students live, some on Zoom. Join us for Pesach this year. Freedom with an outstretched hand. We celebrate a magnificent second night community Seder at Beit Simcha this Saturday night, April 16th at 6:30 p.m., led by me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, with lots of help. It'll be a full and delicious Passover meal, and more importantly, a powerful affirmation of freedom and hope in this season of Pesach. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. You can also donate to Ukrainian Refugee Relief when you sign up for our second night Seder. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and wonderful array of Adult Education Academy courses taught in person and Zoom, and of course our Passover Seder Saturday night and all of our services, which are on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Cohen, in the newest, most vibrant, and fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of Arizona in its exciting beginning years. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Cohen Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Cohen and Irma Cohen, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Cohen Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Cohen Foundation Award, please go to CohenAward.com, CohenAward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is CohenAward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com, TOOJewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are pleased and serene to bring you an occasional feature of Two Jewish Haikus for Jews from our Zen Judaism department, this time for Pesach. Lacking fins or tail, the gefilte fish swims with great difficulty. That was our Zen Judaism segment, Haikus for Jews, for the coming Festival of Passover this Friday and Saturday. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Pesach is coming up fast, the great history experience of the Jewish people, remembering the Exodus from Egypt. We started talking last week about the way that we remember and how the Passover memory is really a religious memory. It's not dependent on archaeology or documentary evidence, even though there's reason to like that stuff. But I remember when a rabbi in Los Angeles, prominent Rabbi David Wolpe, I think he's a past guest of Too Jewish, got up and on the second day of Pesach said, there's no historical evidence for the Exodus. We believe because we believe. And his congregation, a lot of Iranian Jews, didn't like that at all. It made the front page of the LA Times, which very difficult for a rabbi to make the front page of the LA Times, I can tell you. You know, people are not necessarily receptive to the idea that we believe because we believe and the history may not match it, but that's true.
Yeah, and also it helps underline the fact that there are many different definitions of history, one of which is what you believe about the past. That's history. But another version is what you can prove about the past, what you can document, what you can hypothesize, what you can reconstruct. I mean, there are all kinds of versions of history. Sometimes we consciously rewrite history to serve a political purpose.
Not just sometimes these days.
Well, right. These days it's more and more frequent. And, you know, we're dealing with cancel culture and renaming things. And
alternative facts.
Right. Well, alternative universes.
Yeah.
But you know, when, for example, the story of the current war in Ukraine is retold in future generations, it'll sound like myth. It'll sound like exaggeration. Because even now, while we're watching it almost in real time, it's so unbelievable. So back to our miracles, and most of our holidays are about miracles, right, that happen at some point in history, whether it's the Maccabees and the oil, or the Exodus from Egypt and the splitting of the Red Sea and all that. One question is, so why particularly on Pesach do we repeat things so much and elaborate so much on the mighty hand and the outstretched arm and the fingers and all those things that make up the story of Passover? Why do we go through so many variations? And this rabbi said this, and this rabbi said that. We don't do that on other holidays. So what's your explanation for that difference?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's because it's such a central idea that God brings liberation, that freedom, that desire, that craving for freedom from oppression, from restriction, certainly from slavery, has been such a central motif of humanity. There are still people who are slaves today. You know, we like to pretend that, oh, this is something that happened in the ancient times. It's not true. It's still there. And I think that that's such a human need to find freedom and to understand it, that even with all of the other great ideas in Judaism, God and ethics and justice. You can make a case justice is the most important thing. But what good is justice if you're a slave? There is no justice for a slave. And so I think that understanding that freedom is so integral to who we are. But of course, the Jewish definition of freedom is complicated. You're not free of all obligations. You're free to choose whom you serve. And if you choose to serve God, that's the Jewish choice, right? I don't want to be a slave anymore. I think that's why it's so central. And not just for Jews. Tom, it'll be Pesach next week. We should keep talking about freedom. We will talk to you then.
I look forward to it.
Chag Sameach.
Kam Lecha.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. So what do you call someone who derives pleasure from the bread of affliction? A matzachist. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well and enjoy your matzah. And now a word of Torah. This Friday night, we begin the great Festival of Freedom, Passover, the most observed Jewish holiday today, probably. The Torah readings for Passover, as you would expect, reflect events of the Exodus in prose, poetry, and ritual. As a festival, Pesach is special in unique ways. Even the name of the holiday has special importance. Pesach actually has no fewer than four official names in Jewish tradition. Pesach, or Passover, for the Paschal offering, the lamb sacrificed and roasted in the days of the Bible and the temple, Chag HaMatzot, the second name, the holiday of matzah, the unleavened bread we eat for the week of Passover, Chag HaAviv, springtime festival, probably the oldest of the names of Passover, and most thematically, Zman Cherutenu, the season of our freedom. Each of these names has something important to teach us. Each is interesting in and of itself. The word Pesach comes from the word for leaping or jumping in Hebrew, an apt description of the ways young lambs leap and cavort in the fields. The use of this animal for the sacrifice of the Passover reminds us that the angel of death leapt over the homes of the Israelites when striking the firstborn of the Egyptians dead. And it also refreshes for us the memory of the leaping joy of freedom, the ability to move and act as we wish, that is prevented during slavery. Free people can cavort, skip, dance, and jump as they please. Slaves jump to somebody else's command. Hence, Chag HaPesach, the holiday of, well, skipping. The second name for Passover is Chag HaMatzot, the festival of poor man's bread, matzah. Unleavened bread, made with flour and water in 18 minutes or less, baked quickly and simply, food our ancestors made as preparation for a hasty journey in flight. Of course, on Pesach, we eat matzah the whole week, and therefore do not eat chametz. That is best described as not matzah, anything that is made with leavening or fermentation. Lots of matzah this coming week, oh joy. The third name for the festival is Chag HaAviv, the holiday of springtime. Undoubtedly, there was a spring festival observed long before the events of the Exodus led to the creation of this holiday of Passover. Spring is celebrated in every culture and nearly every religion. In our Seder celebrations, the orderly meal held on the first two nights teaches the meaning and story of freedom in a rich and wonderful variety of ways. Spring is featured in that Seder in the green vegetables we dip in salt water and in the hard-boiled egg symbolizing the rebirth of spring. The magnificent love poem Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs in the Hebrew Bible, is chanted on the Shabbat of Passover. It's a text filled with images of gardens and growth and love and the flowering springtime. A wonderful way to celebrate this most beautiful and verdant of all seasons. And finally, the ultimate theme of Passover is freedom. Zman Cherutenu, time of our liberation. It is this essential ideal woven all through the week of Passover, central focus on God's gift of liberty that has made Pesach the model freedom festival for the whole world. In every generation, each of us is obligated to see ourselves as though we personally had been brought out of Egypt. Behold, our Vador Chayav Adam, Lirot et Atzmo Ke'ilu Hu Yatzam Mitzrayim, we say in the Haggadah. In addition to our own celebration of our ancestors' freedom, we are compelled to learn compassion and empathy for the downtrodden. For when we view ourselves as survivors of slavery, we are forced to sympathize with the dispossessed, a central principle of Judaism. Whichever name for this fabulous festival you favor, may you be blessed with a Chag Sameach V'Kasher, a happy and healthy holiday of Passover. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Zach Kamenetz, continues discussing a fascinating subject, psychedelics and Judaism. His organization, Shefa, works to integrate the two. Find out all about it. We'll come back in a moment here on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Volodymyr Zelensky, Ukraine's Jewish president, said that his country will look more like Israel, a democracy on constant military alert, than like its more relaxed European neighbors, given the prospect of long-term hostility with Russia. We will become a big Israel with its own face, Zelensky said last week at a briefing for Ukrainian media. We will not be surprised if we have representatives of the armed forces or the National Guard in movies, supermarkets, people with weapons. I'm confident the question of security will be issue number one for the next 10 years. I'm sure of it. Of course, the presence of armed soldiers is ubiquitous in Israel, where there is a mandatory draft for men and women, and men may do weeks of miluim, reserve duty, every year all the way until they're in their 40s. Zelensky clarified he was not anticipating autocracy. An authoritarian state would lose to Russia, Zelensky said. People know what they are fighting for. Russia's war against Ukraine in its second month now has drawn into battle civilians who have been rapidly trained in the use of rifles and other means of combat. Ukraine will definitely not be what we wanted it to be from the beginning. That's impossible, Zelensky said. An absolutely liberal European country, it will not be like that. It will definitely come from the strength of every house, every building, every person. Well, of all the issues facing Israel now, Palestinian terrorist violence in the last few weeks, how to handle Russia's brutal war and invading Ukraine, Iran and its nuclear program, the one that appears to have put the country's delicate governing coalition at risk is kosher for Passover food in hospitals. I kid you not. When Idit Silman, a member of Knesset from the far-right Yamina party, surprised government leaders and even her party by resigning last week, she did so over hospital food. Her decision brings issues of religious freedom and Israel's Jewish character to the center of public discussion. Silman, a former teacher and healthcare executive, also opposed efforts to allow egalitarian prayer at the Kotel, the Western Wall, and opposed a plan to let more rabbis sign off on conversions, you know, not super ultra-Orthodox ones. I will not abet the harming of the Jewish identity of the State of Israel and the people of Israel, Silman said in her resignation. I will continue to try to persuade my friends to return home and form a right-wing government. I know I am not the only one who feels this way. Another government can be formed in this Knesset. Maybe. The ostensibly precipitating issue is a ruling by Israel's Supreme Court that hospitals must allow people to bring in food not kosher for Passover, chametz, although the hospitals discourage people from doing so and serve only kosher for Passover food themselves. But that ruling has been in place for 2 years, suggesting that Silman's explanation for her resignation is a pretense amid pressure from her base to stop working with the more moderate Knesset factions and Arab lawmakers within the governing coalition. This coalition formed a year ago, making Naftali Bennett prime minister, but only after 4 elections in 2 years shook all confidence in Israel's Knesset parliamentary system and impeded the government's response to COVID-19, among other things. Politicians with little in common ideologically nonetheless agreed to work together to bring stability to the Israeli government and ensure that longtime Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu was finally ousted. Now Silman's resignation leaves the Knesset evenly split, 60 members on each side, between supporters of Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and the opposition, fueled by supporters of Netanyahu, who has remained on the sidelines, but of course signaled he's ready to get back into power. Silman's resignation brings her back into alignment with Netanyahu and the Likud party. If another member resigns from the governing coalition, a new election could be required. And if many resign, the opposition could potentially seize control without an election. If Bennett and his allies can persuade other lawmakers to remain in the coalition, the government will stay in place, but more tenuously. The split also means Bennett's allies can no longer pass legislation on their own. Silman's resignation means that Israel is plunged into a governing crisis at a crucial moment for managing tensions during Ramadan, when Palestinian terror attacks on Jews have historically taken place. After the chaos of the 2 years prior to Naftali Bennett becoming prime minister, we can certainly hope and pray that Israel will right its Knesset ship speedily and soon. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Zach Kamenetz is the creator of the Shefa Foundation, which explores the connection between Judaism and psychedelics and has contributed to the initial Jewish Psychedelic Summit and a variety of other really interesting projects. You mentioned earlier in the show you went through this clinical experience of psychedelics, and I assume it was a very positive one. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that changed your experience of even Judaism?
Well, I would say that my experience in the lead up to the actual journey was a positive one. Being in relationship with these guides, I entrusted all of my biographical, spiritual autobiography about my lineage, about my health history, and there was a very positive, what we call set and setting, going in with a positive mindset, one of exploration and curiosity, and knowing that I would be well taken care of if I started feeling upset, angry, afraid. The first experience was actually very delightful. It was blissful. A lot of color, a lot of fullness, Jewish imagery, opportunities for deep gratitude to the Kaddish Baruch Hu, to the Holy One. We had just gone through a lot of infertility trauma. And this was the first moment that I really had of opening up and thanking God for bringing us through it to actually having a child. But the second one I would not say was overly positive. I describe it often as just deep cosmic boredom. It's like I was closed up in a submarine with no light, no relationship, no color. And I was nervous that I had done something wrong. But over time, through my process of integration, trying to really understand what these experiences meant and meant together, that I had encountered a great spiritual truth that shows up in Jewish mystical literature, but also other spiritual traditions, is that of the axes of fullness and emptiness, of the something, the yesh, and the nothing, the ayin. But knowing that both of those experiences, a religious life, a spiritual life, a relational life, full of connection, full of presence. That's often what we value more than destitution, confusion, the void. But that was just as real, if not more real. And so I came to understand something about my own life, my own spiritual life, that even in moments where I feel disconnection from Holy One, other people, myself, that is still a potent spiritual stance.
I have a peculiar question. I've taught Zohar now for many years, and I occasionally wonder what psychedelics they might have been using. I don't know if you've ever explored Jewish mysticism from that perspective. I assume so. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I think it's hard for a lot of people who encounter mystical literature and can relate to it at all in the first place. I think there's then another type of person, maybe like yourself, who knows about the psychedelic experience and how reliable and repeatable and powerful an experience someone can have just by eating a mushroom, drinking a potion, smoking something, and being brought into a whole other reality. And that seems to almost be like what the Zohar is describing. However, there are mystics in our tradition, traditions all over the world, who practiced, who endeavored, who struggled to reach these states of consciousness through their own minds, through their own practice, through their own relationship with their teachers. And I think what psychedelics can maybe help us see is that these states are possible even without psychedelics. I think that's often what Ram Dass would speak about. His relationship with his guru. His guru said, it's very nice. You can be in the room with Jesus, but you have to leave. There are other ways of coming to these states that in some ways might offer more or different than psychedelics can. So,
but by the way, I always think Ram Dass should be like one of those abbreviations like Rambam, Ramban. It should be a Jewish rabbi, really, to be honest.
Well, certainly a Jewish spiritual seeker.
For sure. Judaism is, in many cases, a religion of regularity. The experience of prayer is supposed to be something that becomes keva, fixed, but it's also supposed to be kavana, deep introspection or focus. Do people integrate Jewish prayer with these psychedelic experiences? Do you try to do that?
I think prayer is an excellent tool for integration. Absolutely. Prayer becomes, in some ways, more available to many people who did not have a prayer life or had a difficult time finding themselves within the Siddur or Jewish liturgy in general. Because I think that most of this liturgy was written from a mystical perspective. There are visions of the angelic retinue, the divine throne,
yeah,
the
Chayot HaKodesh, and so on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The choir of angels singing. How
yeah.
can I even relate to that in my waking consciousness? So there's, the opening of an aperture that is possible either through psychedelics or even through trying to catalyze these states through other ways, either different breathing techniques or stress positions in the body, fasting, etc., ecstatic dance and chanting. And then the ability to actually speak a authentic word of praise, a deeply felt sense of gratitude that comes out in words, is something that becomes more natural for some people. For some people, they need something else, a meditation practice, being quiet, visualization techniques, but even becoming more comfortable with their talit, right? Something that is material, a material manifestation of feeling held or feeling covered or bound with tefillin. So I think the religious tradition, the system of mitzvot, of our connecting commandments, then become tools for integration of these profound states in our everyday lives. And that seems to be the role of the Jewish mystic all along.
Psychedelics aren't necessary for mysticism, but as we've said, they seem to go hand in hand. Can you explain, for example, and this is which psychedelics have people found to be most connecting in a mystical Jewish way in your experience?
Well, I'd say is there 70 faces of the Torah, there are 70 plus faces of how Jews have interfaced and integrated psychedelics with their Judaism. Certainly for the visionary experiences, people have gravitated towards things like mushrooms, ayahuasca, people who are looking for openness in their relational capacity have tried things like MDMA, people who have been looking for the dissolution of almost all of the consensual, realistic constructs have gravitated toward 5-MeO-DMT and DMT itself. And so all of these things which have risk involved, there is either risk in the substance themselves or underlying medical issues that people might know about until after they have these experiences, or even just an unsafe environment that they're not aware of until they're a little too far in. So there's this interplay not only between the substance, but also the setting, who people are with, who they can actually trust, and making sure that no abuse or being taken advantage can happen. So there's this balance between the experience itself, but also reducing risk and harm as much as possible.
If people are interested in what Shefa does and in the work that you're doing with psychedelics and Judaism, where can they go to find out more?
They can definitely go to shefaflow.org and sign up for our monthly newsletter. They can sign up for an integration circle. Soon we're going to be launching a series of classes, either in partnership with other organizations or taught by our new mashpia, our director of emergent education, Rabbi Ami Silver. Hopefully we'll have our Haggadah supplement ready for download before Pesach.
Before Pesach. After Pesach, it's less useful, I'm afraid.
That's right. So we're working hard. And to watch the space as legal frameworks open up, we also not only want to be doing this integration work and this learning about experiences of expanded consciousness within our own traditions, but creating the safest, most Jewishly authentic experience we can create for other people, while also using substances that are legal.
I want to thank Rabbi Zach Kamenetz for a great visit here on Too Jewish, and I continued success with this fascinating project. Thank you so much.
Bezrat Hashem, thank you for having me, and Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Chag Sameach, Moadim L'Simcha. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Wayne Hoffman, author of the new book, How She Died, a Jewish murder mystery solved a century later about the death of his own great-grandmother. And don't forget, join us at Beit Simcha, my own congregation, in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat, all starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush. Come live in person or go to our Facebook page, BeitSimcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson, or go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information. This coming Saturday night, sign up for our wonderful second night Passover Seder at Beit Simcha. You can also include donations for Ukrainian refugee relief. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up to affirm freedom with an outstretched hand. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our pre-Passover preview of Pesach music. The Seder's coming up Friday and Saturday. This one's from Safam. It's their version of Betzeit Yisrael, when Israel left Egypt, the psalm that we sing all through Passover. My friends, may you have a healthy week, a Shavua Tov, a Chag Sameach V'Kasher, a wonderful holiday of Passover, a good week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Betzeit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Bet Yaakov me'amel. Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.